The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This episode of Bend the Knee is brought to you by Sir David the Huntsman, whose words are, "Replacing Sir Ezra soon."
Hello and welcome to Bend the Knee, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt, the Bud Knight.
And I am Sir Ezra, the Unwatchful. Welcome to our Song of Ice and Fire book club. Today we are into chapter 41, John 5 of A Game of Thrones. And in Fire and Blood we are discussing Three Heads Had the Dragon, governance under King Aegon the First.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sir Ezra, how are we doing this week?
Well, I think I'm on the... here's the thing, Sir Matt. It all depends on how the poll goes on Facebook. This very well may be my last episode ever on Bend the Knee. I mean, if people ask me to be banished, then I will be banished. And
yeah, I mean, hey, we're gonna go ahead. I mean, I forget things too sometimes.
Here's the thing.
It's okay.
Hey, if this is your first time listening, by the way, like sometimes people just click on this first episode, made a big blunder last week. And, I wanted to say this episode is brought to you by Lysa Aaron. Thanks for killing John. Because you know, it's like, the funny thing was, is when I got off the podcast last week, we finished, I started pacing around my house. I was just like, For years, I was like, yeah, she probably killed him. Yeah, I'm sure she did, actually. And then I was ready to bring it up in that chapter, and Sir Matt's like, yeah, dude, it's actually confirmed, man, that you're right. I mean, you're right in thinking that, but it actually, you know, says that. And I'm just like, oh, my gosh. It's just funny how, like, you know, and I think, too, when I've gone backwards, so now when I'm back reading in Game of Thrones, it's like some things that I feel like I knew towards the end of the series, I'm sort of like, what happened to that knowledge? You know, where did it all go? It's just kind of funny. So I've been pulling a Sir Matt and I've been reading the end of the series, you know, to sort of keep all that fresh, because if you don't read it and if you don't, you know, look at it, it actually you do kind of lose it. Think about this, Sir Matt. When we were doing A World of Ice and Fire, I'm reading through Fire and Blood. I'm like, oh yeah, I'm starting to remember some stuff from the King Aegon, you know, his conquest that I totally forgot about. And we had just read it a couple months ago. So, you know, it's those little tiny details. But this was not a little tiny detail. This was kind of a big one. And so it's just kind of funny the way it came out. So anyways, but yeah, we'll see how it goes. We'll see. My future is in the hands of the realm. So we shall see.
Yeah.
So how are you doing, buddy?
Hey, well, hey man, I'm doing good. You know, have been having some issues on the King's Road. My car's having some issues. Just had to take it in for $1,500 worth of repairs. So, you know, that's just that was like the thing I was just dealing with kind of before I hopped onto this podcast here. So I was like, oh sweet, yeah. But hey, you know what? That happens sometimes. Your cart breaks down, and you find yourself at a, you know, little inn at the crossroads.
Yeah.
So you just kind of, that's how, you know, so. Goodness. Yeah, but, you know, I'm pumped because things are going good. Other than that, man, we got a HBO, we got a teaser this week.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, we got a teaser. We're going to do a big breakdown of it. We got a cool chapter in Fire and Blood. We got kind of a shorter chapter in the main show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We've got a great poll going that's going to kick Sir Ezra off the podcast.
Life's
good.
Sir Matt, if you want me to go, all you have to do is say, my friend, just say, you know, hey, your time has come.
Hey, you know. All right. Hey, no, it's all right. It's all right. So, all right. Well, Yeah, I feel like everything's going good. But HBO show is coming soon. Yeah, go
yeah,
ahead.
Yeah, quick update just for everyone. We did send out the Google form, so you guys should have that in your mailbox. I sent it out this past weekend. So just for T-shirt sizes for our patrons, if you can fill that out, we want your size and address and all that good stuff. Make sure you fill your name out there so we know who it goes to. And, that is in your inbox. So please, if you could, fill that out, and that'd be fantastic. So, yep.
Yeah. Yeah, but and Sir Ezra and I have a lot of other stuff behind the scenes working. I know I've been talking about a big Summer Hall Theory for like, seems like 2 months, but I'm almost done with it.
Mm-hmm.
And Sir Ezra and I are going to be getting that going here soon.
Yeah.
So, yeah. We think we've got most of the kinks worked out in the Raven's Nest. So
that's gonna be coming soon.
Yeah, I think we've got that good. So scheduling that. So we also have a drinking game to plan.
Yeah, we do.
I've been working in my office a little bit here, kind of reorganizing, restructuring stuff, getting some more equipment. So I can get back to doing some more meat and cheeses.
Yeah.
So I can get back. I want to start filming those, and so I've been working on some of that stuff too. So,
nice.
Lots of things work in the works.
Well, here's the thing: if I'm not banished, I may have to fly out there soon. You know, it may be time for to actually mount my dragon and take off. So, you know, I also was working on a theory. But it was
Who kills Liza Aaron?
Who kills John Aaron? Oh my gosh.
Yeah, man.
So I had to abandon that one last week. anyways. But no, I actually do have a couple other kind of green dream topics, things that I want to discuss that are open ended and there are no answers. You know, I mean, it actually, one of the things, the Ghost of Aaron Hall, a couple months ago, I had been holding off on reading the Winds of Winter chapters, and now I'm just like, screw it. You know, I'm just ready to...
Yeah, we're almost there.
I'd been holding off, but it's like, nah, it's just time to read them. So I started that this past week. So if you guys were noticing that, we had held back on that, time to end that. I think if you have questions or comments or things, Ravens, you want to discuss about some of those chapters, feel free to send them, because I am now reading those. So just, you need a trip up like last week, because, man, I just started diving into all sorts of, Game of Thrones stuff, which has been really good for me, because I'm in... probably 3 to 4 different fandoms each week, and it just is like nuts to kind of keep track of. But it's been
Hey man, I'm right there with you. You know, Sir Ezra, I know you do some Star Wars stuff, some Lord of the Rings stuff,
yeah.
And so you're always keeping up on that. And I do some video game kind of podcast stuff as well. And so
it's a lot,
man. It's a lot going on right now.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
It's good stuff.
So, okay. All right. Well, news this week, Sir Ezra, there was, and I shared it in the group on the page, a short little 1 minute, no real new footage teaser kind of hype trailer, released on YouTube and Twitter and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And so for those of you guys who haven't seen it, we shared it on the page. All you gotta do is a quick search. There's not really anything new. It's just kind of cool. It basically shows the table at Dragonstone, and it shows kind of the pieces on the map, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like there's like a lion and a wolf and a dragon, and there's some other ones people have broken down, and I have kind of a breakdown here, so we'll go through it. But what ends up happening is that ice is coming from one side, kind of mist, and then fire is coming the other, and they kind of meet in the middle. But it's interesting what happens to some of the pieces, and people are having all kinds of theories and speculation.
Oh, good.
And what that means, and does it have anything? And I think, obviously there's tons of secrets abound in it. But really, the only three pieces we see that get kind of taken over, they give you good shots of them, are we see the direwolf first gets covered in ice, a dragon gets covered in ice, and both of those are facing south, and then you see a lion facing north that gets consumed by flames, and then the flames and the fire kind of meet in the middle, maybe about where, I don't know, the trident would be.
That is where it looks like they meet. Yeah, that's actually a good observation. Yeah.
Yeah. So, So I have some breakdowns here of it, and there's some people saying that if you kind of do like screen by screen, like Alt Shift X did a really good video on it. But other people that kind of do screen by screen, you know, frame by frame breakdowns, you can kind of see stuff. So you have the mist starts and it's coming. You know, that's, they're saying that's symbolizing the White Walkers. Obviously, it's rolling from the north, just as the Army of the Dead would soon be bearing down on the rest of Westeros. Next up, we have the Direwolf map marker. The Direwolf, symbol of House Stark, is quickly, it gets frosted over.
Mm-hmm.
So does this mean that the Starks are going to be the first to perish?
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking that, and I have a couple of thoughts here, and I haven't read any of those breakdowns that you have yet, so this is just me here. But yeah, I saw that happen with the Direwolf, and then you're probably going to get to it, which is the Lannister Lion, you know, from the south, mm-hmm. is also, mm-hmm. you know, consumed. And
it's consumed by flame, right.
Yeah,
so,
by flame.
Right, and so, yeah, so we'll get to that, but... So anyway, so with the wolf getting consumed by ice first, do you think that this is a literal trailer? Do you think this is a kind of hype trailer? Let's go down the rabbit hole because that's what people want us to do.
Okay, fine, we'll do it.
So yeah, you know, right out the gate, we're going down some rabbit holes here, Sir Ezra.
Yeah.
Let's just speculate here. If the Starks were to, say, mostly perish at the beginning, uh-huh. right?
Yeah.
Because we see two things get consumed by ice and then one thing get consumed by fire. So that could make a lot of sense, which is what a lot of people have said, where maybe that battle in the north with, like, you know, mm-hmm. the White Walker stuff does happen first. And then to me, the idea that the Lannister is consumed by fire mm-hmm. is like the idea maybe Cersei does blow up King's Landing or something like that, right? And that's maybe that's how she dies or something. So
yeah, okay. So my quick observation, I'm just kind of clicking through the trailer as I'm talking here. And so you're right, the Direwolf is consumed first. And then right after that, and I know I'm not going to jump too far ahead, just the dragon is consumed as well. So I'm wondering, mm-hmm. would those pieces indicate maybe like a major player? You know, is one of those, mm-hmm. like one of the Stark children going to perish in that battle? And then maybe one of Dany's dragons, another one, you know, perishes or something, you know, shortly after. But I do think you could see the Starks. I think Winterfell's going to be lost, man. I mean, I really think it's you know, going to be completely under the control of the Night King. What do you think?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, no. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, of course, this is all going off this kind of trailer here.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. So, you know, if things were to go the way that they go in this trailer, then that would lead me to believe that maybe what ends up happening is the war with the Night King is kind of going on. And maybe they have to split their forces or something.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe like Cersei starts marching north or something, and you know, maybe they're put in a position to where they can't just fight the one battle against the Night King, even though there is the, you know, the truce and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe they have to start fighting wars on two fronts.
Well, yeah, and I'm thinking we've talked before is that, you know, there would be a retreat, and we've read different supposed plot leaks where it's like, you know, Dany right. takes her dragons in and rescues, you know, some of the major players. You know, she's actually flying folks, you know, over to the Eyrie or over to with the Manderleys, White Harbor, you know, so maybe Winterfell actually does fall, you know, mm-hmm. and they have to kind of escape. That might be one of the first things we see. So
yeah.
I don't think the forces are going to be all the way. I think there might, I mean, last season they broke through the wall. I mean, the wall is down.
Right.
So, you know, they're going to be quickly, I would think, on their way to Winterfell, and you might not be able to get all those forces from the south
right.
up there in time, you know, but yeah, it seems like they might just time it out right to where they meet at the neck. So
yeah. So there's some other smaller things in here that I want to talk about. So people have broken this down and they say, you know, the shot then kind of pans out before it hits the dragon. And it says, if you look closely, there is a map marker for Daenerys's unsullied forces. And they would be, it says, in the far end of the map in the shore above, in the shot above, a far distance from the Stark map marker. The Starks and Winterfell are in this shot. The Unsullied, that would make them somewhere on the northeast coast.
Hmm.
So the Unsullied were over in
Westerly.
Casterly Rock. Mm-hmm. Remember? Yeah, they were over at Casterly Rock. They went there and there was nobody there. Her Dothraki army is what attacked Jaime Lannister over in the Reach.
Mm-hmm.
So Yeah. So now her unsullied forces
mm-hmm. yeah.
will have marched over to the east side. Maybe they're going to get on a ship as well, mm-hmm. and maybe ride north, or maybe they're kind of hanging out there, to kind of still be maybe a blockade in the event that Cersei were to break her promise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Maybe they're hanging out there over in, like, you know, White Harbor.
And that's where it looks like. That's what it looks like. Yeah. And if you look just to the right of that and over, you know, beyond, that is the Vale. Actually, it looks like you can see some of mm-hmm. the, you know, what could be the Eyrie. So, right. being consumed down south of the neck. So I don't know. I didn't notice that till just now. I just went back and looked, and I can see the unsullied, you know, marker right there. So,
yeah.
Huh.
So some other things people have noticed. It says down south things are looking a little more calm for the moment, although there's an alarming fire burning beyond Dorne. It says notice the sun with a spear map marker in the background. The fire quickly spreads, setting ablaze the Lannister map marker, which we imagine sits over King's Landing. Soon the whole countryside is on fire.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, the two forces of nature meet, colliding in a stream filled haze near the center of the map. Notably, they clash. The clash happens where the three forks of the River Trident, a place of, you know, obviously of historical significance.
Mm-hmm.
But the cool thing, though, is that as the trailer kind of ends, the fire and the ice meet and they form this kind of rock formation,
yep.
almost like a new wall.
Yep. Okay. Yep. That's exactly. I'm glad I didn't jump ahead because that's what.
And several people are suggesting that it is dragon glass. At least that's what they're going. That's what it kind of looks like. That's what they're kind of going with.
Oh, it does kind of look like that, actually, doesn't it?
Right.
Just a little bit. Yeah. And to me, I mean, that could be like a new, I mean, yeah, some massive formation. I mean, it's just that they're reclaiming and taking back some land. So, I mean, to take mm-hmm. the north and for the north to be completely under, you know, winter itself and under the Night King's rule would be crazy. That would be a bittersweet type of thing, you know, to have it. It's lost. It's a place that we love. And the Starks have retreated south and, you know, gosh, that actually reminds me of a couple of different epics, you know, where like people from the north have to migrate. They've got to leave their homes and, you know, they sing songs about the great times there, you know, and like if you imagine if this continued for another 300 years, the north would be another place that kind of like beyond the wall right now. It would be a place of wildness, you know, which would be nuts because it looks like it forms a wall. I mean, it looks like it forms another,
yeah.
you know, great barrier. So,
yeah. So, yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, this is all speculation on what more likely than anything is just a hype trailer.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's what we do here. We go down the rabbit holes to see, you know.
Why not?
I don't know. Yeah. Why not? Yeah. So yeah. So, I thought it was pretty cool. I definitely watched it, and I was like, oh, this is cool.
Mm-hmm.
Good. I'm glad that we're now finally starting to get teasers.
Yeah.
Because it means that the next one is going to be new footage.
Right. Yep. For sure. Yeah.
It'll be season 8 footage.
Gosh, so. when do you think that'll be? That Super Bowl area time?
Oh, before? Absolutely.
Before, after?
Maybe something small before, like
mm-hmm.
but I definitely think there's going to be a Super Bowl.
So okay. Yeah, that'd
be cool. I for sure absolutely think there would be a Super Bowl trailer.
Good. Good. All right. Awesome. All right, well, all right, my friend. That was fun. That's good to get down some rabbit holes. What do we have next here? Are we going into Maester study?
Yeah, I believe so. I think there is kind of a Game of Thrones convention going on right now.
Oh, okay.
I was trying to remember what it was. I saw it on Twitter. And unfortunately, we're not there. So
yeah, what's up with that? I mean, we're over here.
Yeah, I mean,
counting coppers, you know. So
let's see here. What is it called? I don't know. I can't find it.
That's okay. Yeah. So if someone went, you know, send us some photos or, you know, let us know if there is one coming up soon. We would like actually to eventually get out to a couple, you know, some more cons and stuff. And so not even just Game of Thrones specific, but, you know, just cons in general and kind of see what's going on out there. So. Wanting to turn into a con junkie myself. I've been to a few, but I'd like to go to more for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the 2020 calendar, the official Game of Thrones 2020 calendar was released. And it's actually super interesting because it shows what looks like a White Walker riding a giant ice spider.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's just kind of cool. It's the first time I've seen something like that, so.
Huh, all right.
Which is what we were told, you know, happened during the Long Night.
Yeah, yes, yeah. That'd be pretty scary.
So, okay, all right, let's go ahead and head on over to the Maester's study.
Yeah, so we are talking about the three heads had the dragon, which I think is just it had three heads. The governance under King Aegon the First. And what's interesting with some of these chapters is just how we kind of go back and forth. You know, we'll talk about Rhaeny's death, and then we'll kind of, we'll go to a time, then we'll hop back to a time, talking about a different aspect of King Aegon's reign or his rule. So this is more about how he reigned or how he governed the realm during his time, and really sets everything up for future kings and his descendants. So it's pretty neat. We've got the establishment of the Grand Maester spot and the King's Guard and a couple other kind of cool things. So
yeah.
All right.
Let me go ahead and read the first little line here. Aegon the First Targaryen was a warrior of renown, the greatest conqueror in the history of Westeros, yet many believe his most significant accomplishments came during the times of peace. The Iron Throne was forged with fire and steel and terror, it is said, but once the throne had cooled, it became the seat of justice for all Westeros.
Yeah, well, and that's something to kind of to think about. You know, it's not just conquering the Seven Kingdoms or, you know, six, but to rule them and to have people see you as their king, you know. And and one thing that this chapter reminded me of was that Aegon found it important to what did they call it? It was a tour. I call it a tour. What was it called? Where they went from kingdom to kingdom, you know. And
right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And he talked about the importance, the significance of that, right? You know, and that it was better to kind of by doing that, by showing the dragons, you know, sometimes you forget, you know, or you have like a younger generation who wasn't maybe there, maybe some of the younger sons who didn't see all the war or the fierceness of the dragons, or to see their, you know, their sires kind of, you know, destroyed, and they start to get brave. They start to, you know, possibly want to revolt, you know, or rebel in some way. So, you know, I thought it was important to go around and make sure that everyone remembers, you know, I've got three dragons. They're pretty awesome. They're pretty boss. And, you know, don't even think about it, really.
Well, not only that, but you want to see your leader, you know, out there kind of ruling. And, you know, there is kind of that pomp and circumstance that comes with it that you kind of want to see. That's kind of the whole point, right?
Yeah, like, he said that the small folk, that was more just for the lords. The small folk, though, he wanted them to see, you know, him. He wanted him to, you know, they need to see their king. If you never see your king, you know, if you don't get this opportunity, it's like a big ceremony. They turned it into big, big feast. You know, he would sit in court, you know, and he would, there were tournaments, thrown when he would come around. So that all helps the small folk, and it makes it seem like this prosperous, you know, time, you know, so.
Yeah. So we also see, it talks about how the Targaryens started brokering marriages between the noble houses, you know, from far ends of the realms, in hopes that it would start to create a bunch of alliances, help tie the conquered lands together. And that's something we see many, you know, Targaryens do. And then obviously the lesser lords and stuff, you know, do as well. It says, like, you know, Visenya and Rhaenys took special delight in arranging these matches. Through their efforts, young Ronald Arryn, Lord of the Eyrie, took daughter of Torrhen Stark of Winterfell, whilst Lauren Lannister, heir to Castle Rock, married a red wine girl from the Arbor. And so, you know, that's a way to kind of start building those relationships and hopefully tying up some of the loose ends that, you know, they had left in there.
Yeah.
In their conquering.
Yeah, there was even the one I found that was interesting was the marriage between the Blackwoods and the Brackens. You know, like one son from each house took a daughter from the other house, you know, and it was like, you know, just kind of neat because they've been feuding for years, and there was some way in which they wanted to try to mend that feuding, which was neat, actually.
Yeah. And let's and then it. But I like this line here, or this paragraph here. Though none had doubted that Aegon Targaryen was the final authority in all matters relating to governance of the realm, his sister Visenya and Rhaenys remained his partners in power throughout his reign, save perhaps the good Queen Alyson, the wife of King Jaehaerys I. No other queen in the history of the Seven Kingdoms ever exercised as much influence over policy as the Dragon Sisters. That was one of the lines I had, you know, talked about in my initial review that I like, because it's like clearly you, this was written before Cersei Lannister.
Yeah.
you know, but I just, I find that. But yeah, I mean, so they clearly had a lot of freedom. And that's something we don't see under some of the other queens, is it does seem like Aegon gives them kind of full authority almost.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, I just found the bit where it's like a royal progress, right? So as they move around, he would always take one of his sisters with him, one of his queens with him, so that the realm could see her, and the other one would sit in judgment. You know, they would sit on,
right,
you know, the Iron Throne, and basically they had full power. Even though he had a hand of the king, they still sat there. I mean, I'm sure when both of them were gone, then it, you know, defaulted to the right, the hand.
There must always be a Targaryen on the Iron Throne.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, exactly. so, yeah, that was pretty neat. And so with that, looking at the Iron Throne in King's Landing, we get more of the Aegon Fort, right? Just the how it kind of came to be and how it just kept growing. You remember that bit where it's just gonna, sort of talking,
right,
about,
yeah.
It became at one point, I think, when we end this chapter, it's the third largest city or inhabited, you know, place in the Seven Kingdoms, behind was it Gulltown in
Old Town.
Old Town, yeah. I don't know if Gulltown was it or not, but it was definitely Old Town was one of them. So anyways, yeah, it definitely kept growing and growing and growing. And for a while there, you know, they had the hills, right? So you had Aegon's Hill, you had Visenya's Hill and Rhaenys Hill. So they named the three sort of hills after the Dragon Lords. And we'll talk more about as it grows, sort of what happens. There's a couple rebellions and different things. Well, actually, some pirating, some slavery that causes Aegon to sort of look to his defenses there in King's Landing a bit. But so that was one segment of the chapter that I was. It's a little boring, but it also, right, just shows you the evolution of King's Landing, you know. And so, and why? Mm-hmm. Also, sometimes I think people wonder, you know, it wasn't. It's why Maegor and some of the Targaryens later have to do so much to it, because it wasn't intended to be a city, really. I mean, it was sort of like it just grew into it. It was this fort that kind of just kept growing, and it's really mismatched and takes a while for them to get it kind of uniform, I think. He's spending a lot of time on Dragonstone. He preferred to be there because it was more roomy. It was more, you know, well-stocked and had more history, so.
Yeah. No, absolutely, yeah. I like something I like. I kind of like as you know, right after that, is this when it kind of starts to talk about Aegon and his journeys, right? Which we had talked about a little bit. It is better to forestall rebellions than to put them down.
Yeah.
And I think that's a, you know, a really good thing, because, you know, if you can just kind of hold it off, you know, or keep or prevent it from happening in the first place, then you don't have to start a war.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and that was where I was saying, you know, just the idea that, like, you know, as time, because he reigns for quite a while, and, you know, some of the lordship turns over to younger sons. It's like they need reminders. You know, you got to keep going out there and, you know, kind of reminding people that we're still here, we're still in power. And, yeah, so, yeah, that was part of that royal progress that they were making, which is smart. I mean, which is really smart. I mean, he's also, like the other thing, too, is when he was going and doing those royal progresses, he would sit on. It said at one point it didn't matter whether it was, whatever dais or throne he was sitting on in the different regions, he would hold court, you know, and he would sort of he kept all those maesters. What was it, like something like six maesters near him, so he could understand sort of the rule, so the laws of the land, and show the people that he was just and that he, you know, knew how to be fair to folks. I mean, again, like we had said back when we were doing A World of Ice and Fire, everyone, after a while, people were just bending the knee. And he showed them that I'll forgive you, you can bend the knee, and you can keep your land, you can keep all of your, you know, inheritance and what have you, and I'll set you up as a warden or something, you know, ruler of that region. But but you right. still are underneath the king's authority. So,
yeah. Well, you know, and I like, you know, it also helps when you fly in on Beleriand, right? You know,
absolutely.
It definitely makes it. But, you know, this idea of, you know, not having wars start, right? And you can kind of have that ability to put them down. Although it does talk about there's still fighting, right? Like there's definitely
yeah.
still.
Oh, yeah.
There's definitely still fighting.
Yep.
A line that I like, and I don't know if it's the same in the books, but I know it's in the show where, you know, when Tyrion shows up, and it's when Ser Dontus is,
mm-hmm.
You know, being forced to drink, and Sansa saves him, and then Tyrion shows up, and he, you know, Joffrey's sitting there, and he comes over and he consoles Sansa, and he's like, you know, hey, like, I'm sorry to hear about your father, and he's like, well, her father was a traitor. He's like, yeah, but he's still her father. And that's kind of the thing with these rebellions is,
yeah.
you know, even like, you know, you look at somebody like Balon Greyjoy, right? Like, yeah, he's totally, well, for starters, he's dumb. I think Balon Greyjoy yeah. is just an idiot. Like, there's no way you're going to, like, take over the Seven Kingdoms. But he's still Theon's father. So, like, you know, even that he grew up like a Stark, his dad is still always going to be his dad, even
yeah.
if his dad was in the wrong. So
right.
I think that's something that Aegon Targaryen kind of realizes. And I think that's why he, you know, is able to.
Yeah.
You know, that's why I think they're instilling these laws and trying to get these marriages and stuff. So, hey, we need to quickly move on from this.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and the other bit, too, was how much he kept close ties with Old Town and with the faith. You know,
right.
so he was often working with them and always trying to appease them because, again, you know, him having two wives and them, those wives being his sisters, you know, I saw somebody post something funny in the group not too long ago. You know, they're reading about how people were, you know, upset with like the Targaryens for their marriages. And we all get like defensive, like, how dare you, you know, like, why are you mad at Aegon for having two wives and they're both his sister, you know, because Ger puts right. us in that place where it's like, we love these characters and we're like, what's wrong with that? You know? So it's just kind of funny. But yeah, mm-hmm. so he's always trying to keep up good, you know, good face.
Yeah.
With
I mean,
faith.
Yeah, right here. Aegon's chief concern was peace.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. So yeah, I think, you know, that's the first law of the land of the first law of the land shall be the king's peace,
yeah.
King Aegon decreed. And any lord who goes to war without my leave shall be considered a rebel and enemy of the Iron Throne. So not necessarily the war to like, you know, if you're gonna feud with other lands, no, you just cannot fight each other, period.
Right. Yeah, keeping the king's peace. Yeah, that's a good one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So so now it does move on here, just a little bit. I'm on, you know, page 45 here, and this is where I was bringing up earlier how the city had grown and needing those defenses. Mm-hmm. And at one point, they look to the example of Lannisport and Old Town to build their Great Wall. Okay, so they build mm-hmm. this big wall around King's Landing just sort of because of the Summer Island raids. You know, so many women and children, 1,000 or more, I think, mm-hmm. were like sold into slavery. And so mm-hmm. he definitely starts, and that shows concern, you know, for his
right.
for his people. He may not always be there and be this just, you know, ruler and have his dragons to protect everybody, you know, because at first it's sort of like, who would dare, you know, attack King's Landing?
Oh, yeah.
But then he sees he's also away, you know, a lot of times and just wants to show his people that they are protected and that they're safe. And so they start to kind of work on building up King's Landing and from there. So let's see a couple other things here.
Well, it goes on to kind of talk about, I like that it talks a little bit about each of the queens. And again, this is another thing that we had kind of read. I think this is expanded upon. You know, it talks about like Queen Rhaenys took great interest in the small folk, you know, had a special love for women and children. Once she was holding court in Aegon IV, a man brought before her, was brought before her for beating his wife to death.
Oh, yeah.
The woman's brothers wanted him punished, but the husband argued that he was within his lawful rights. Since he had found his wife abed with another man, the right of the husband to chastise an erring wife was well established throughout the Seven Kingdoms, except for in Dorne.
Mm-hmm.
The husband further pointed out that the rod he used to beat his wife was no thicker than his thumb, and even produced the rod in evidence. When the queen asked him how many times he had struck his wife, however, the husband could not answer, but the dead woman's brothers insisted there had been 100 blows.
Wow.
Yeah. And so that, yeah, so that was, you know, within his right. And then so Queen Rhaenys consulted with the Maesters and Septims and rendered her decision. An adulterous wife gave offense to the seven who had created women to be faithful and obedient and therefore must be chastised. As a god has seven faces, however, the punishment should consist only of six blows, for the seventh blow would be for the stranger. That the first six blows the man had struck had been lawful, but the remaining 94 had been an offense. Mm-hmm. That's kind of the rule of six. And we talked about that before. That had come up at some point in World of Ice and Fire. That, then it talks a little bit more about Queen Visenya. So I like this kind of background here. Talks about, you know, she did not share her sister's love in music. She was not without humor, though. But, you know, it says there's a darkness in her.
Yep.
And it says... I like this, though. It says, you know, Visenya was to outlive both her siblings, and it was rumored that in her later years she could no longer wield a sword, so she delved into the dark arts, mixing poisons and casting malign spells. Some even suggest she might have been a kinslayer and a kingslayer, that she may have killed Aegon Targaryen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, yeah. Or, you know, Aenys, too. You know, his son. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, that, I mean, that gets kind of dark at the end with her. It, one of the things I thought was funny is right before that, they talk about her, she kept for her own fool a hunchback called Lord Monkeyface. So I had never, hadn't come across, I don't know if that's new, but I don't remember that being in A World of Ice and Fire. And, you know, when he choked to death later, she acquired an ape and dressed him in Lord Monkeyface's clothing. So trying to show just this this other side of Visenya, that she did have some humor and things. She was just more of a warrior, more of a stern, you know, type of warrior.
Right.
And one thing to contrast her, as you said, with Rhaenys, and we've always talked about her being more into the arts and various things. We talk a lot about that when we talk about Aenys. But it was said that there was great wisdom, actually, in her... giving favor to some of these bards and some of these singers, because they would then go sing of her beauty, you know, around the kingdoms. They would sing of the warrior king, you know, Aegon, and for the small folk, you know, I mean, if they are kind of okay and upset and accepting of, you know, this, or they see Aegon in this light, that really does a lot for their cause, and it really sort of helps to solidify their power. And so that's one thing I didn't, you know, I think we had actually talked about that again previously, but it's really important to kind of think about. We just had that happening with Catelyn, you know, bringing Marillion, the singer, along to sort of capture all of the, you know, the story and to tell what happens, you know, later on. So
yeah, so I one thing I want to say quickly about that. The idea that possibly Visenya Targaryen poisoned Aegon Targaryen.
Yeah.
So if that was ultimately what is happens, or even if it's not, that is interesting, because that would draw a parallel to Rome, right? So when Rome became an empire under Octavius, and then he becomes, you know, Augustus Caesar, his wife Julia. Livia, Drusilla, she wants her son, who is not Octavius Augustus's son, Tiberius, to become emperor. And she keeps trying to get him to name him as his heir, and he won't do it. And so she ends up poisoning Augustus so that Tiberius can actually then become emperor. And so it's interesting, because here you have Visenya, same thing, where she's probably going to want her son Maegor to become king over you know, one of Rhaenys' kids, you know, Aenys, who does become king. So it's just kind of interesting that it's like that kind of parallel. Oh, we've just established this new kingdom, kind of a parallel to the Roman Empire. And, you know, that same type of thing. So that's the first thing that came to my head when I read that. I was like, oh, that's kind of like, that would be kind of like Rome, which we know Gurr draws inspiration from. So,
yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. You know what? As you're telling that, I was thinking about, like, it's kind of an odd position to be in. You know, you have Aenys, and it's outside of this chapter, but you have him being the firstborn, right? And then you have Maegor, right? Is the secondborn, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
yeah.
But Visenya is the firstborn, or the eldest, you know, sister.
Daughter,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah. You know, and then Rhaenys is the younger. So it's just kind of a weird dynamic, isn't it? You know?
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
Yeah, okay, so a couple more things just before we wrap up here. I thought, let me see if I can find it on page 49 here, just talking about the need for a Kingsguard. I thought that
was pretty
neat.
Yeah, and this And this is also, we had read this before. It's a similar event somewhere in World of Ice and Fire. Right, the idea that Aegon was attacked, right, and then you know Visenya has to save him.
Yes.
Right, Visenya has to save him. It talks about your, like, even with Blackfyre in your hand, you are only one man, and I cannot always be with you. This is where she draws Dark Sister, slashes him across the cheek.
Yeah.
With her guard, yeah, she's like, your guards are slow and lazy. I could have killed you as easily as I can cut you. You require better protection. King Aegon bleeding had no chance to agree. No chance, you know, but to agree.
Yeah, and what I love that Ger does though is with the formation of the Kingsguard, it's not just who wins the tourney. You know, if there's some great tourney. She actually says, no, that's not a good idea. We need loyal men. You know, not they can be super skilled, but, you know, a loyal guard is going to be more watchful. You know, they're going to be more aware of what's happening to their king and on their guard. And so, you know, she actually, doesn't she pick him? I think she picks the, because she is, you know, always watching over her brother.
Right.
And so she ends up picking the Aegon Seven. That are written in the White Book, the King's Guard, Sir Richard Root, Sir Addison Hill, Bastard of Cornfield, Sir Gregor Good, Sir Griffin Good, his brother, Sir Humphrey the Mummer, Sir Robin Darklyn, called Dark Robin, and Corlys Velaryon, Lord Commander. So those are the original kind of seven. Two of those actually end up dying protecting the king, and all served with valor to the end of their lives. And so they, you know, it's important that the first of the seven be these epic, you know, kind of heroes and really embody what it means to be a Kingsguard, because it sets the example for everybody else coming, you know, after them. So,
Yeah. So, all right. Well, that is it. The Three Heads had the dragon, governance under King Aegon the First. So next week for World of Ice and Fire, Fire and Blood, we're going to be doing Sons of the Dragon. So I'm interested to see, I'm going to have to pull up Sons of the Dragon again and see if it is like a word for word retelling of the novella that we got.
Yeah.
I think it kind of is. So,
right. Well,
kind of a cool way. It makes it easier to find. Yeah.
Yeah, it does. Well, and I even kind of thought, you know, as I went back and read a couple of those other chapters, that there's just little tiny things that are just subtle differences or things that he leaves out or adds in, just real minor. But so it forces me to read every last bit of it, which is fine. I enjoy it. So, okay, my friend, I think it's time to head into the reread.
Absolutely. Let me pull it up here.
Yeah, last week, I mean, I can easily recap this for us. We learned
go right ahead.
That John Arryn was killed by Lysa, so that happened. Catelyn gets news from Riverrun that House Lannister is gathering an army at Castle Rock, and that actually is quite of. I think that's kind of interesting. I love thinking about Riverrun and what she's feeling with her brother Edmure and with Hoster Tully and what's going on there. Is he too sick? Why didn't he write the letter? Why also is Lysa keeping it from her sister, or you know, not bringing it to her right away. She's kind of power hungry. There's a duel between Bronn. He ends up killing Sir Vardis Egan, and Lysa is forced to set Tyrion and Bronn free outside the Bloody Gate to take their chances with the Mountain Clans. So that was a recap from last week. Now, this week we are in Jon 5, but last week we were in Jon 4. And, well, I'm sorry, last time we were in John. Yeah, that's weird.
Yeah.
That sounded weird. Well, we were never in John, but we were in John 4.
Last time we were talking about John.
Oh, boy. Oh, goodness. It's all right.
You're lucky that wasn't a female character.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, dude, the amount of, in the last couple of weeks, the amount of offensive things I've said or the amount of things that I've said wrong are just piling up on me like crazy. It's so hilarious. But anyways, yeah, last time talking about John in 4 there, Sam appears in the yard in his training, and Sir Alistair Thorne is a dick, you know, and basically... is trying to teach, you know, the John and his friends, you know, how to fight. He's trying to prep these men for the Night's Watch, to be men of the Night's Watch. And, you know, they end up kind of helping Sam out. They kind of, he convinces the other recruits to go easy on Sam and help him along, because he is, he's a craven, my friend. He's a craven. So this week, though, the summary for John 5, Sir Alistair announces that he is passing 8 recruits, including John, There's a bunch of celebration. He's happy that he's moving on. They're all ready to get out from underneath Alistair Thorne's watchful eye. Sam, he's not going to be protected, though, anymore, and he is actually going to have to continue training with some of the new recruits that are coming in. John heads to Maester Aemon to see if Sam will be allowed to be his steward, since he can read, write, and do sums. All right, there's your summaries. Let's get into some of these details here, though. And this is kind of, as you'd said, Sir Matt, a pretty straightforward chapter. You know, it's
it's definitely a shorter chapter here. So I'll go ahead and read kind of the first thing here. You are so hopeless as any boys I'd ever trained, Sir Alistair Thorne announced when they had assembled in the yard. Your hands were made for manure shovels, not for swords, and if it were up to me, the lot of you would be set to herding swine. But last night I was told that Gurren is marching 5 new boys up to the King's Road. One or two may even be worth the price of piss. To make room for them, I have decided to pass 8 of you on to the Lord Commander to do with as he will. He called out the names one by one. Toad, Stonehead, Aurox, Lover, Pimple, Monkey, Sir Loon. Last he looked at John and the Bastard.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, I love that he's nicknamed them all, you know? I mean, that's sort of a, mm-hmm. what's interesting is we see this from John's point of view, right? And it's Sir Alistair Thorne, you know, who's a jerk, you know? He's just that's his job though, man. You know, that's what he's supposed to do. And it's funny, I mean, I imagine he treats every single one of the recruits kind of the same way, and he finds ways to, you know, toughen them up a little bit, or to knock them down a few notches if they need to, or build them up if they have to be built up, you know, except for Sam, clearly. But
yeah,
I don't know. It's just a different, different approach. And, he's also pissed. He's up there at the wall, man. You know, I mean, he kind of, when you look at Sir Alistair's, you know, where he came from and his whole history.
We looked at it, you know, he was a Targaryen supporter who was sent to the wall, you know, for being a Targaryen supporter. So
yeah, so I mean, I don't know if he only knew, you know, who John truly was or is. So Pip and those guys are very, very excited, and they're all, you know, hooting and hollering and definitely excited. And it says that, let's see, the other boys gathered around the 8 who had been named, laughing and cursing and offering congratulations. Halder smacked Toad on the butt with the flat of his sword and shouted, "Toad of the Night's Watch." Yelling that a black brother needed a horse, Pip leapt onto Grin's shoulders and they tumbled to the ground, rolling and punching and hooting. So, you know, they're excited because it's like graduation, man. You know, you finally get to go get a job, be assigned something, get into this normalcy, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Which is good. So
yeah, you're no longer training and you're a member of the Night's Watch and
yeah,
stuff like that.
But Sam,
you know, except for Sam. Yeah.
Yeah. So,
yeah. And I mean, essentially, you know, this is where they kind of, so they kind of go have their special meal.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lots of food there. Right. I mean, they got it from the, Lord Commander's table. Right. Which is cool.
Yeah. There's a line before that, right, where they're talking, you know, and Sam kind of says, you know, Sam and John are kind of talking and, he says, you know, kind of, I'm happy for you. He says, you know, he looks at John. He says, you'll be first ranger someday, just as your uncle was. And John says, is.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah, he would not accept that Benjen Stark had died. And then that's kind of it. So that's just like a one quick little kind of line in there. But I like that. It just that soft reminder about Benjen Stark. Right. Like that's still, you know, something John is concerned about.
Yeah. Well, and all of that, I mean, that, like, there's so much attention given to that, you know, there's so much attention given to, whether Benjen Stark is alive or not. And so that's why we've had great conversations in the past about it. And it's one we'll have in the future, I am sure. But yeah, I love to see the hinting, you know, just that he is still alive and he's out there and he's not necessarily who we think he is, you know, according to Gurr. So, you know, the whole Cold Hands thing is something that, Gurr has actually spoke about publicly. So,
Cause he's not, Benjen Stark isn't Cold Hands, you know.
Right, that's what Gurr said.
Cold Hands is Cold Hands.
He's Cold Hands.
Who was Benjen Stark?
There you go. Okay, there you go. So anyways, he's reminding him there. At this point, the guys kind of run over, get on John a little bit. They grab his arm and all that kind of stuff. And by the time he turns back around, Sam is gone. And he kind of is feeling for his friend there. And then that's when we get the table set with all of the good eating. So they feasted on a rack of lamb, you know, baked in the crust of garlic and herbs, garnished with sprigs of mint.
Yeah, sounds great.
So it's good. Yeah, mashed yellow turnips, all sorts of good stuff, butter dripping everywhere, salad, chickpeas, turnip greens, you know. We had this, Sir Matt. We had the iced blueberries and sweet cream, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You and I have had that, actually, so.
Yeah, that one was really good, actually.
It was really good, yeah. So
it's basically just ice cream, you know, blueberry ice cream.
Yeah.
Ice cream. Mm-hmm. It's awesome.
And so Pip is starting to wonder, well, okay, what's going to happen now? You know, what happens next? I mean, where do we go? Do we stay together? And some of them are hoping, you know, Gren's hoping to be a ranger. You know, Mathar wants to be, what's he say? Oh, he says you and everyone else, right? And Halder is the one who says, it's the builders for me. What use would rangers be if the wall fell down? So everyone has their own, their strengths and their... where they want to be. They're all supposed to be fighters, though. They're all supposed to be able to pick up, you know, steel for the Night's Watch if need be.
Where do you think you would be, Sir Ezra?
Wow, that's a great question.
If you had to take the black, where, you know,
I don't know, man. I think I because you actually learn more about the stewards in this than you realize, which is that they
right
that
yeah
because
when you first hear about the stewards, you think it's just kind of like they're janitors, but that's not really the case.
No, they hunt, they do a lot of different things. They need to read and write, you know, and I don't know, I kind of like the idea of being a steward. That'd be kind of cool. I even look back at like Valenpool and some of the stuff that he was responsible for. You kind of like look to you know, organize things and what have you. So I don't know, maybe that
right, because you know, what does I'm forgetting his name. Donald Noy, like, you know, Donald Noy is an armorer, but is he a steward? Is he a builder?
Yeah. I mean, so that would be, well, yeah, he's
a steward, I guess.
He's just the blacksmith.
Yeah, but he, I mean, he's got,
let's see.
Yeah, but he's got, but you initially are put into one of those three categories. So clearly there's sub, even rangers, there were, I think there's like sub jobs inside of that.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, interesting. I have to look up all the different, you know, jobs up there, but I don't know. What about you? What would you, you know, go with?
I think I'd probably be a builder.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that'd be kind
of
cool.
So you'd be like repairing the wall and repairing some of the keeps and stuff, you know?
Yeah, you know, building stuff, fences, stuff like that. You know, swinging a hammer. I think that'd be, you know, I'd be okay.
Yeah, you could do that. Yeah. Nice. I don't know that I would be, I don't, you know, like, I'm down to be a, like, not like a warrior. Yeah, I'm down to fight, but I mean, beyond the wall, out in the cold, I love the cold, but I mean, it sounds really cold up there. You know, it's like, I like a certain level of cold, and that's just too
well,
much.
Well, you know, yeah, I don't know. I didn't go into the military, so I'm not entirely sure how it works, but you know, like, even, it seems like all of them take tours kind of, or turns, you know,
on the wall,
watching the wall, yeah, like, you know, yeah. watching off the wall. So, yeah, whatever we need to do to obviously keep Sir Ezra off the top of the wall, because he clearly is not watchful very much lately. But
I'm not ready, you know. Guys. So, yeah, the unwatchful should not be up there if we want to survive. All right,
And how'd those wildlings get over here? Well, I don't know.
Sir Ezra was up there. He was, you know, I don't know who put him up there.
Yeah,
but yeah. Oh, so here you go. I just looked up kind of the structure. Here, you've got the steward. Okay. The stewards are responsible for the assortment of crucial features, providing vital day-to-day services. They hunt, they farm, tend horses, gather firewood, cook meals, make clothes, maintain weapons, bring supplies needed to the Night's Watch from the south. Yeah.
So he's probably he's a steward. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And
so Donald Noy would be a steward.
Yeah, and I would love.
I'd be okay being a blacksmith. That'd be awesome.
No, oh, yeah, that'd be cool. Yeah. Yeah, you got Bowen Marsh serves as the Lord Steward or First Steward. You've got the builders are responsible for tending to and maintaining the wall and its castles. The order provides masons, carpenters, miners, woodsmen to this end. Rangers are the main fighting force, adept at surviving in the wilderness, tasked with scouting and patrolling the haunted forest beyond the wall. They actively defend the wall and ride out to face the watch's enemies, including wildlings and the legendary others. First Ranger is Benjen Stark. So, yeah, because he's not dead. All right. Yeah. Yeah. So there you go. There's just a couple of the, all right. Let's dive back into this though. So yeah, they're excited to get their positions and we'll see where each of them kind of, end up next time we're here. But because for now, I mean, John at one point, like he doesn't finish his strawberries or his blueberries, excuse me, his blueberries and cream. He's not eating very much. And when they ask him about it, he's just worried about Sam, you know, and he's just like, they're going to, you know, it just doesn't sit well. He's a friend of his now, and he's worried about him, you know, getting either, you know, I don't know, tormented, killed in some way. What, you know, no one's going to be there to protect him.
Right.
So, let's see here.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, yeah. So, I mean, you know, I mean, basically he ends up just going to, you know, Mr. Amon. Yeah. Is ultimately where he goes. Go ahead.
Yeah. Right before that, one of the things that, he talks about his sadness and all this different stuff, and they talk about possibly going to Eastwatch and or the Shadow Tower and all those different things. He goes back, his direwolf is there, and he goes out to ride for a little bit. And I thought this was an interesting sort of conversation he has with himself. He's out riding. He goes down the creek a little bit. He just literally takes off, and no one's going to stop. No one is there to stop him. I mean, he can just obviously leave and ride on if he wants to. And he actually thinks to himself, you know, that he could just keep riding, you know, and by daylight or by the, I don't know when it was that he was out, but that he hasn't sworn his vows yet. He is still a free man. He still could leave. And so he has that little thought, that little conversation with himself. And I thought that was kind of interesting, just thinking back to, you know, Winterfell. And he's sort of like, you know, there's nothing there for me, though. Really, I wouldn't be welcomed. You know, I'd be welcomed by my brothers, but there's no place for me in King's Landing either with my father. So yeah, he's kind of
well, he thinks, and then he thinks about his mother too for a second.
Yes, he does. Right. Yeah.
And he you know, thinks about, like, you know, she must have been somebody pretty unhonorable if even, you know, Lord Eddard Stark wouldn't.
Yes, too ashamed to speak of her. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what he says, you know, but because she was either a whore or an adulterous fool, something dark and dishonorable, or else why was Lord Eddard too ashamed to speak of her? Yeah, and he's just kind of makes him sad, you know, just kind of wonder. He's kind of got nothing, and he knows once he marries the Wall, essentially, that he can't leave. He starts to think about these other places, these other great sites in the world that he will never go to, you know. Unless he's sent there by the Watch to either get recruits or supplies. So, But as you said, then he shows up and speaks with Chet and is trying to get in to speak with Maester Aemon. And they said that he's abed, but Maester Aemon lets him know that actually, really, I don't sleep that much anymore. You know, the older I get, I don't need as much much sleep. And that treating a visitor is actually kind of a nice little mix up for him. So John is shown in there, and he gets a chance to talk with Maester Aemon. And this is kind of cool. I was thinking as I was reading, how much does Maester Aemon know, you know, about John?
Oh, exactly.
That I was just wondering, like what does he know? I don't know. I wish we knew more, you know, but we'll get it later. But, yeah, so he kind of says John refers back to his own upbringing and basically – looking at not being wasteful. He explains everything from when Sam showed up to where they are now and how he was kind of picked on. And, you know, yeah, so he wants to kind of see if Maester Aemon will take him in as a steward. And Chet is kind of offended, you know. They kind of ask the questions like, well, can he hunt? Can he gather, you know, can he ride a horse? You know, can he do all these different things? And John kind of says, no, he can't do any of those things. But he can read and write. And he's read every book in his father's library, and that's what he loves to do, you know. And so he could be of service there because one of the other stewards that's with Maester Aemon is blind or is going blind or has bad eyes or something
right.
like that.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, and Chet can't read. Is that right? I mean, he's not able to help with that. So that would be a great help to Maester Aemon, right, is to help.
Right.
So.
Well, yeah, and he's—I mean—he's also worried, you know, he's going to die, you know, if he doesn't.
Yeah, if he doesn't do something to help his friend, yeah, for sure. But it actually, he finds a good. This is a good spot because Chet can't read the ravens. Maester Aemon needs someone to read them and someone trustworthy, you know, because the other guy, his sight is failing. He's older. He's not,
right.
It's not that he can't. It's just that it's starting to fail. So you need to train someone to kind of take over that role. So great wisdom, yeah. You know.
Well, you know, and I think too, it's like, I don't know that Sir Alistair Thorne would actually ultimately kill Sam, but that's what they think, you know, is going to happen. I mean, like,
yeah, no, yeah.
I mean, you talk about how badly you need people. It's like, I'm sure they would find something for Sam.
Yeah. 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 And I think he's just sort of like, John doesn't see any point in, he kind of makes the point that like Randall Tarley, is that his father, right? You know,
right.
Wasn't able to make him a man in all these years, you know. There's nothing that we're going to be able to do here to change him. He's not something who's going to change. He is who he is. Why waste time? You know, why waste him as a resource? You know, he says, he reminds Maester Aemon that the Night's Watch needs every man they can get. And they
exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. I mean,
so use his skills, you know, and Maester Aemon's moved by it. He's like, yeah, you know, that's, this is, you know, he can see that Maester Luwin had, you know, had taught John well, actually, and mm-hmm. he says your mind is as deft as your blade, it would seem, and he, you know, John says, does that mean? And he, Maester Aemon says, it means I shall think on what you have said. The Maester told him, and now I believe I am ready to sleep. Chet show our young brother to the door. So yeah, he's moved by John and sees his wisdom, and I actually wouldn't be surprised if Maester Aemon had. You know, he talks with the Lord Commander as well. So some of this decision making that's done in the next couple John chapters, you know, Maester Aemon's seen a lot here. You know what I mean? Even though he's blind, you know, I mean, he's
right.
He's seeing what character,
well,
John has.
Hold on a second. Did the Tarleys support the Targaryens? I think they did.
I'd have to look it up real quick.
During Robert's Rebellion, I'm fairly certain that they did.
Did they? Let's see.
I'm gonna pull it up here. I am fairly certain that they were Targaryen supporters during Robert's Rebellion.
What are you getting at? If they?
Well, I'm just saying, you know, he would also know that he's a Tarly, and that's and so maybe that's something else that was kind of
In the decision making, maybe.
Yeah.
It could be.
Yeah. I mean, wow, dude, right here. Yeah, Randall Tarley. That's what I thought. I forgot. He commanded the vanguard of the Reach during the Battle of Ashford, where he killed Lord Carafin and forced Robert Baratheon to retreat.
Mm-hmm.
However, Randall's liege, Lord Mace Tyrell, took credit for the victory. But
yeah, huh?
You know, Maester Aemon would know better.
Yeah, for sure. Huh.
So maybe that's another reason why he's you know, kind of keen to Sam, is because you know, he knows that yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That, I'm sure. Yeah, exactly. That's a good point, actually. Yeah, just thinking about, even though those you know, aren't supposed to matter up beyond the wall, we know that they do. Those alliances.
Yeah, they clearly do. Yeah.
Yeah. So, that's a good point. Interesting. So anyways, yeah, we'll see. I mean, you know, in the next couple John chapters here, just that gosh, it feels like it goes so, I don't know, like it's going to take us a bit to really get to some of the some of that action that John has. So, because he's going to have some turmoil here at the end of this at this book, with just, I brought up the whole bit about him riding, you know, kind of riding around, just looking, being free and thinking about leaving because of, you know, as we know what happens here towards the end of this story. So, mm-hmm. All right.
Well, yeah, absolutely. So yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it, kind of for the chapter.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's pretty much it. John, I mean, it's short.
Then John kind of leaves, and that's it. So, all right, well, Sir Ezra, I think we have a raven, don't we?
We do. Yeah, we have a raven here. Let me get the old doc up here. Let's see. Oh, this was from Lord Eric of House Noble. And we actually, I think, received this a while back, and it was right around the time we were switching things up with Follow-Up Friday, and so mm-hmm. we hadn't had a chance to really get to it, and it's pretty hysterical, and it's a good raven. So I will read through it here real quick. Dear sir, several weeks ago, I sent a bullshit attempt at a raven. at that time, I was on about the 11th episode, and I had not yet heard the topic I was writing about to discuss, so I thought that I would send a quick raven between sets while I was working out from my iPhone using voice text. I don't think I even read it after to proofread. I had not yet heard the amazing ravens that were to come from Lord Adam Parker and the Ghost of Harrenhal, and realize now why my raven got no response from either of you. So, no, not at all, sir. Not at all. That's hilarious, though. He says, I was wrong for sending such a bullshit raven, and I have brought shame on my great house. A man can only admit when he is wrong and beg forgiveness. Part of the topic, Cat's Paw Dagger, I was asking about has since been discussed a little bit, so I will try again because some of the ideas I have ideas on have not yet been discussed. So here we go. This is definitely pertaining more to the show. Hold,
real quick, 1 second.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I just want to say, even if somebody's talked about it, go ahead and bring it back up. Like, it's fine, especially because we'll come back to it. We'll talk about it again. There's always new information that we, you know, we'll kind of uncover or think about, and that's going to make all those connections.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, if you had asked us 2 weeks ago who kills John Aaron, Sir Ezra still wouldn't have known then. So, you know, I mean, it's okay.
Please bring it back up because, you know, good God. Yeah. No, that's actually funny that you say, because I wish I had just like I have all these docs with all these notes, and it's just sort of like it's all over the floor. I feel like if you could take a picture of my room, I've got this just stuff pinned against the walls, and I've got rope, you know, I've got lines going from here to there, right, trying to connect stuff, and it's just a madhouse of ideas. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, you're right. I mean, it's like we do want to kind of rehash these things. One of those things was like Benjen Stark. I want to get back to that and kind of talk about, you know, some more thoughts I have there. But I want to use the text, and I want to be able to pull, you know, direct quotes from it. So, and that takes time, definitely. So always feel comfortable sending us, your ravens about anything. He says, this is definitely pertaining more to the show, as I have not read the books except for the Dunk and Egg series after hearing your recommendation. Awesome. Really glad you picked that up and read it because it's fantastic. And it's a short read. It just helps you kind of get into the world, you know. It has seemed to me that there is going to be something more significant to come from Arya having the Cat's Paw Dagger than just killing Lord Baelish with it. Given that it is Valyrian steel, was in the book Sam read, or that, yeah, that Valyrian steel was in the book that Sam read, on the cover of the first Game of Thrones book, and is also made of dragon bone and dragon glass. It seems like it's meant for something more than just killing Baelish. I tried to think of why Arya needs to have this dagger. Maybe she just needs a piece of Valyrian steel for the Battle of Winterfell, and this is the only reason, but it feels like there's something more significant than that to me. One idea I had while thinking of her possible character arc in Season 8 is that she still has her list, yeah, which is true. She's still got the list that she's, you know, she's checking off, you know. She would not need the dagger to kill any humans on her list, but there is someone on her list who may not be human anymore, which leads me to my next point. In the show or book, did the Mountain actually die, and did Qyburn bring him back to life? When Qyburn brings back the Mountain in the show, he has some tubes of green stuff going into him, but it is never explained how he's brought back to life, if that is indeed what happened. We see the Mountain struck by one of the Faith Militant with a weapon that seems to pierce his armor, but he doesn't even flinch. Does he not feel pain because he is a badass, or is it because he is dead and reanimated like the Whites? We are all fairly certain that the Clegane Bowl is going to happen, and I assume most people think the Hound will win, but I wonder if he is going to be able to actually kill the Mountain. I see a scenario where the Hound gets the upper hand and stabs the Mountain, but cannot kill him because the Mountain cannot be killed by regular steel like a White. If that were to happen, the Hound is going to need Valyrian steel to kill him, or possibly Dragonglass. I could see a scenario where Arya steps in to save her old traveling companion. Would be a cool way to still have Clegane Bowl and let Arya check another name off of her list. I would not be surprised if none of this happens, however, but it seems to me like there is going to be something significant to come from this dagger, possibly Arya using it to help Jon kill the Night King, the scene when Bran holds it and asks Baelish if he knew who it used to belong to makes me think Bran saw the whole history of the dagger and that it is more important than we have seen so far. Hopefully this was a more worthy attempt at a raven. Lord Eric of House Noble. So there we go, Sir Matt. Thoughts on that?
Wow. A lot of thoughts. I like that idea. I like that idea that maybe Arya has to step in and crosses a name off the list. As far as the mountain goes, in the show, in the book, his head gets like cut off, doesn't it?
Say that again.
And in the books, I'm pretty sure that the mountain's head gets cut off.
Oh.
In the show, I don't think that's the case. I think he's just poisoned, and I think whether he is dead or he's just kind of like zombified. I mean, I don't think it's entirely stated in the show that he's like dead, because they just call him Sir Gregor. In the books, he's like Sir Robert Strong. He's like a new character.
Yeah, Sir Robert Strong. Yeah, because I just looked up Sir Robert Strong, and I just noticed that I need to go look up the mountain here. Yeah, that's a good point. I was actually. So now in the show they are calling them one and the same thing though, right? I mean, that's correct in the show.
Right. Okay. Right. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, they don't call him Sir Robert Strong. They just call him the Mountain, Sir Gregors. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Let me see here real quick. I don't know if there's anything in here in the wiki that will tell us whether or not he was how he was killed. Let's look real quick here. Or how he was. Let's see. Okay, Dance of Dragons. Oh, yeah, so he's fighting, let's see, wow, doesn't really,
his yeah, see, skull, the mountain, yeah, yeah, his, in a Dance skull. Of Dragons, his skull is brought to Sunspear, so he doesn't have a head, I guess.
Well, and that's, isn't that like sort of an air, let me think here, gosh, this is a lot to come back to, let me see here, Qyburn experiments on Gregor before his impending death.
Yeah, Obra ponders if the head is really Gregor's. That might not be the case. Yeah,
right,
yeah, okay.
Ponders whether it is, actually, yeah. He concludes that the poison was manticore venom thickened with sorcery to draw out the mountain's dying instead of killing him instantly. That is in A Feast of Crows, Chapter 6. Let's see here real quick. Yeah, because they can hear his screams of agony. They're so loud that he can be... heard in the entire Red Keep. I think what it is also that the Lannisters decide, yeah, as sort of a way to, you know, they're trying to preserve him, right? But then they're sending his air quote skull to Sunspear, you know, as recompense for the deaths of Elia and her children.
Right.
Wow. Huh. Although, you know, you've got Qyburn saying that it took beetles many hours to clean the flesh from his bones. Qyburn later mentions working on creating an unbeatable champion for Cersei and uses several female prisoners in his experiments. That's weird. Mm-hmm. You know?
Right.
So there's
so the... you know that leaves the idea open to, you know, these female prisoners, what if they're kind of like pregnant and it's like some sort of blood magic type thing like Mira Mazdor, and that's how he keeps them alive.
Wowzers. Yeah. Yeah, okay.
That's a deep rabbit hole.
Holy
to go
smokes,
down.
It is. Well, but no, I mean, that's really interesting. I mean, think back to Bran's vision, right? Doesn't he have, you talked about this, like the vision that he has, or in the dream, mm-hmm. what he sees
right.
when his third eye is open, doesn't he see some, what we believe is Sir Robert Strong?
I'll pull that up. That's the third Bran chapter, I believe.
Yeah, 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 I'm going to read a little bit here. So Sir Robert Strong is a knight acquainted to Qyburn, a giant of a man 8 feet tall. And again, this is in A Dance of Dragons, Chapter 65. He is to fight for Cersei Lannister in her trial by combat. Qyburn's suggestion that he joins the Kingsguard. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, yeah, go ahead. So this is when Bran is having that dream. It says, you know, he looks east. He sees a galley, racing across the waters of the Bight. He saw his mother sitting alone in a cabin, looking at a bloodstained knife on the table. He looks south and sees a great blue-green rush of the trident. He saw his father pleading with the king. He saw Sansa crying herself to sleep at night. He sees Arya in silence while holding the secrets hard in her heart, which is interesting because that's, you know, mm-hmm. that line is both current with what was happening and also... foreshadowing, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Because she let her wolf go, and so that you could read that line as, oh, this is what's happening, and then also some foreshadowing, right? The list and things like that. There were shadows all around them. One shadow was dark as ash with a terrible face of a hound. Another was armored like the sun, golden and beautiful, which probably Jaime Lannister. Mm-hmm. Over them both loomed a giant in armor made of stone, which, clearly, you know, the mountain. But when he opened his visor, there was nothing inside but darkness and thick black blood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, blood. Huh. That is interesting. Yeah, just some more tidbits on it. If that is what we're...
Yeah, that's from Chapter 17, Bran 3.
Yeah, okay, gotcha. Something interesting that Sir Kevin Lannister notes is that he doesn't take food or water, and he never sees him use the privy, right? So,
yeah.
So that's interesting. Let me just look here. There are some theories, by the way. Bran's green dream. There it is, right there. As to who this person is, but yeah, there's more on A World of Ice and Fire, Westeros.org. They've got a lot of good theories and different things brewing here. So that is interesting. So it comes back. So the question comes back to Arya and would she possibly help, you know, the Hound, you know, kill his brother if this is his brother? Well, in the show, it will be, right, for sure.
Right.
I mean, they're all concerned about. I think we can almost say in the books too that it is. I mean, they're all concerned about his identity. Kevin Lannister, Mace Tyrell, they're all kind of like saying, you know, no one needs to speak about his identity. We need him to prevail in Cersei's trial and all this good stuff, you know. So that's all going on. But yeah, I mean, so would Arya end up be, you know, could we see her helping out in that fight, Sir Matt?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's definitely a possibility. I mean, I still feel like the Hound is going to kill his brother somehow with fire. I think fire would do the job.
Okay.
And I think that would be a kind of fitting theme, right? You know, like he's been scared of fire his whole life, and he has to use fire in order to kill his brother. And it's that kind of full circle thing, right? Like his brother kind of made him the Hound, by burning him, and so to have to burn him back would kind of, you know, be that full circle thing. But the idea that Arya somehow intervenes, whether it's with the dagger or something else, I think is definitely a possibility. It helps her cross a name off the list or something. So
yeah, you know, something that's interesting, I'm just reading some of these theories about Robert Strong, and you know, we never see his face, right? You know, he always has his face shield down, and Doran Martell actually says, or Doran Martell says that the skull could be, actually, it's large enough that it could be Sir Gregar's, but there's also the idea, you know, you said with the Bran green dream that he sees just that black blood behind the visor, so there maybe is no head, as you say. So that's that. Back to what you were saying, it's that it's just sort of a, you know, who knows what type of sorcery it is.
It's like it's kind of like a headless horseman type of thing, you know.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, you may, yeah, exactly. So they may have actually sent the head, but they're, you know, other ways to animate him and make him move. So yeah, you're going to need some type of special blade or magic or fire or something to destroy or to kill Robert Strong, because the whole idea is that he's an unbeatable, you know, guy. That's what Qyburn's working for. He wants to make this undefeatable champion. So,
right.
We'll see how that goes. But you know, the other thing that was brought up here by Lord Eric that I think is interesting is the idea that the blade, the Valyrian steel dagger, that it has a lot of significance. There's a lot to it. I mean, you've got the dragon glass, the dragon bone. It's Valyrian steel. It's been there from the beginning. You know, a lot of different mystery, different wordsmithing by various characters on you know, who it belonged to originally and who used it and all that kind of stuff. So I think that is something we've tried to talk about before and one of those things that we'll come back to again, I'm sure. So, but
yeah, all right. Hey, great theory. Thanks for sending it. I'm digging this house noble here.
Yeah.
Combat is an ocean and we're the sharks.
Yeah.
Most people don't even know how to swim. I like
it. Oh, that is hilarious. That's awesome. All right, Lord Eric, thanks, man. We really appreciate it. And thank you to, you know, all of you guys for listening. You know, don't forget to check out our Patreon series. We've got some fun stuff. You know, we had actually contemplated doing one of the green dreams there, but I think Sir Matt and I have been talking about just taking, you know, he might have a topic, I might have a topic, and it's more of a just every once in a while dropping a Green Dreams type of episode for you guys. So we're working on that, and that will be coming soon. So definitely stay tuned. Send those Ravens. Continue to send those to btkcast@gmail.com. We have got sort of the kinks figured out. We actually are using Sir Thomas and possibly Sir David next week to work on some of the Discord stuff and see if there's ways to make it a little bit better for you guys and for the show, you know, for the Raven's Nest. So stay tuned on that. I have Christmas break coming up soon, which I know everyone hates me for that, but I do, and I will be reading to try to repent, you know, for my sins against the realm. And in my defense, let me just say that I did fully suspect, and for some reason, and I have read that chapter, it's just like, by the time you read it, Sir Matt, who cares anymore? I mean, at that point, you're sort of like, you're right. So it far is, beyond it.
Well, and like, and to be fair, of all of the deaths and stuff like that, John Aaron's, like, who killed John Aaron? It's kind of not super important.
Well, and like, and maybe that's why, you know, like I'd always kind of suspected her, but then maybe I suspected her because of my first initial read. Obviously, you know, we learn what we learn, but over the time, it's become less and less significant, and it's amazing to me that, you know, I don't know that I forgot it, but yeah, in my defense, it's one of those things that's sort of like, by that time, it's sort of like who really cares? And I need to go back and watch the show, because I was just reading in A Dance of Dragons here, and I was looking at how much the show actually does a decent job of. I mean, we're there, we're beyond. I always forget that we're beyond where the books, you know, are, you know, and there's a lot there, and so sometimes I get you know, some of that also mixed up or forget what happens in the show. So anyways, friends, but yeah, we're gonna have more of that coming. I think Sir Matt and I also talked about doing getting the rewatch up and going here soon at the start of the new year, and getting some stuff kind of backlogged. I think we'll have a chance with this format. We can sort of, you know, get through a couple different chapters over our break or over the holidays, and then have more time to do some live stuff and to do some Green Dreams, some Raven's Nest, and some rewatch stuff with you guys. So we're looking forward to that. So if you feel free, if you got the coppers and you want to support us at patreon.com/bendtheknee, we'd appreciate it. You know, I mean, we've got horses breaking down, you know, we've got swords that need maintenance, you know, whatever. So, I mean, you know, it is what it is, but, so, all right.
So anyway, as always, guys, thank you so much. We want to thank you for playing the Game of Thrones. In our next episode, we will be discussing chapter 42, Tyrion 6.
If you like our podcast, don't forget to subscribe, like us, write a review, leave a comment, or send us a raven at btkcast@gmail.com.
We will see you in a week, and remember that a Lannister always pays their debt.